Ismara good Kaya, Gormaho good. Thanks for giving the chance to speak about a priest called Father Tom Jones, whom as a child I do remember celebrating Mass, Fado, 75 years ago to be exact, in Glenbey. We were there on holidays, my mum, my brother Donal and I, and my brother James, we were there on holidays, and it was an amazing, the little old man used to spin around and do that time the prayer called Lord be with you, Dominus Wabiscum, and I'll never forget the way he used to spin around to give us a blessing and turn again. And that was in July of 1950. He died on the 19th of September 1950 in the Bonsecours Hospital in Tralee. Just nearby was a famous handball court where he starred as world champion, Irish champion, Kerry champion, Munster doubles and singles champion. So the man, there was no end to his handball skills and his athletic skills. So I became a priest myself, as Father Tom Jones did. And for the Diocese of Kerry, he spent 10 years overseas. I spent 10 years overseas, and the rest of my priesthood I spent in Kerry, as he did. So here I am, retired now in Killarney, and talking to you, Radio Kerry.
So tell us a bit about that first time you had seen Father Tom Jones. And I suppose as a child, what did you see in your eyes? Did you see this priest who's this huge champion? Like, what was your thoughts when you first met him?
As a five-year-old, I did not know that, but we were sitting in the front seat, and my mum, I suppose, made sure we were up near the front so we wouldn't be misbehaving, you know, in church. We were staying in the house next door. Mike Breen, John Breen is still there, and to the good, God bless him, we took the room upstairs there, 30 shillings a week. Now, that's about, in modern day, about €2 a week, bed and breakfast. Well, I don't know about the breakfast. We got bed anyways. You know? And it was next door to the church, Breen's. It still is there in the village of Glenbey. And next door to that is the handball court, the original one, which was there when we were children. We played there. I played there with John Breen. You might remember it. And with another local man who's now in England, who owns the Killarney Heights Hotel. His name will come back to me in a sec. And we used to play around the handball court, which Father Jones built with the local people there, 1946. That was the golden jubilee of his priesthood. He was ordained Maynooth in 1896. So the Golden Jubilee was 1946. He built a handball court, and that was demolished in 1979. And the superb new community centre and handball court was built by Father Michal Gallivan and men like Kevin Griffin and people like that in Glenbey. It's a super setup. I mean, it really is. And so it's in the site of the original court, which Father Jones had built in 46. He was replaced, imagine, in 1950 by Father Dennis Griffin. And I was visiting yesterday, my brother Donal and I visited the churchyard there. I said a prayer over Father Tom and the other priest whom I knew, Brian Kelly now, Monsignor Moriarty, and Donacha O'Griaffa. Now, he had come from Ballymacallagat in 1950 to replace Father Jones, and he had managed with the local people in Ballymac to build a handball court in Ballymacallagat, and they're still going strong. Ballymac, famous for the Murty Mac and around the McAllistrum, some girls there, Prendival girl, they've won everything in this country, you know, in handball. I mean, I played handball there myself, a bit of squash when I was working in Tralee. That was in the 70s, long ago. But anyway, imagine that, Father Griffin, handball creator with the locals in Ballymac, and they're in the junior football final in Croke Park these days. So I wish them the very best, you know. The great Gaelic and sporting tradition there. And handball is linked with the GAA. It's one of the more minor sport, rounders, handball, hurling and football, camogie, of course, and now ladies football, pelling them on, as they call it. But Father Jones, I didn't know as a child that he was a world champion, but I said the way he could spin around as a small little bald-headed old man, I was mesmerised, fascinated. Con Dennehy, who, like yourself, is a journalist, asked me, Father Tom, in Glenbey, we launched the book on the Glenbey handball court. John Joe, the great handballer there, he launched it, you know. And Con Dennehy asked me, when did you start writing the book, Father Tom? And I said, 79 years ago. Con, I said 75 years ago, sorry, when I met Father Jones for the first time in church, yeah.
Amazing. So it's been a whole journey, I suppose, finding out who Father Tom Jones is.
Well, that's true, because everywhere you'd go in Kerry as a young student and priest, you'd hear stories about Father Jones. there are many, many stories. Some are in my book now about him called Unbeatable. I even got more since, you know, I could middle write a second book now, more stories are coming in.
Volume 2.
He was legendary. The great late Brian McMahon, who I met a few times, his son Jim now is retired here in Killarney. Jim told me that his father, Brian the Master, said, if you see a group of senior Kerry priests in a circle laughing, they're either laughing about a story about Father Tom Jones or about a story about Father William Ferris. I remember Father Ferris as well. When he retired, he came to live here in Killarney. I saw him in the street. I never actually met and spoke with him, but I knew a lot about him. He published 6 books, which I have, all his 6 books. Father Jones published 2 books. So they were amazing men, literary-wise as well. Father Ferris was a great historian. Now, the two of them were actually on the hit list by the Black and Tans. Father Ferris in Tralee, where he was cured in St. John's, where I spent 5 years myself, in that same house. And Father Jones, when he was moved to Killorglin during the War of Independence and right into almost the Civil War times. So Father Jones was fearless. Fearless when it came to playing handball. Fearless when it came, I can tell you, some of his daring feats, above all when he was in Ballyferriter, you know. And they're interesting. But he was a fearless man. He was very fit, very strong, afraid of nothing, unbeatable. Yeah.
What was his kind of character build-up? Like, what was his childhood like?
Yeah, it's a good question. He was born, actually, in Castle Street. They all think he was born on Rock Street. But imagine 1 year after the Fenian Rising, he was the second of the eldest of eight in family, Michael Fitzgerald and Ellen Stack. And they moved in 1872. So he was 3 or 4 years of age to number 13 Rock Street. It's now called the Old Oak Pub. Formerly it was called the Pick and Whistle Pub, which I blessed when Sean Lade came back from England. He used to play hurling with the Kingdom in London my time. He asked me to bless the pub. It backed on to the market in Tralee, the old mart. And actually his dad, Father Tom's dad, Michael, built a handball court in the backyard of the pub. So he had a private handball court. The dad was a great hurler. One of his stepbrothers, because then when the mom died, Michael married again, and Mrs. Fitzgerald, she was native, I think, from Ventry, and she had 4 children, 3 sons and a daughter. So they were a big family. They were 8 and 4 in all, you know. Oh. Yeah, it's quite a large family. But anyway, they were brilliant at handball. And handball in the 1880s, when he was growing up, a teenager, was almost a professional sport. People don't know this about handball. In our town here in Killarney, you have Ball Alley Lane. My late cousin now, Andy O'Sullivan, purchased Lyons Garage, Ball Alley Lane, and the handball court there. So now a big furniture store on High Street in Killarney. 200 people could watch handball there. There was gambling and side betting, and there was a purse for the winner. It wasn't often a cup or a trophy, a purse. Like this in boxing, a purse means sprawn money. And Father Tom Jones loved money. He was a mighty man to gather in money. In fact, Omarachu August Branach, they have a fabulous series on Irish authors who wrote Askailge. So if you look up Tomás Mac Owen, they'll say he gave him great praise as a writer, as a musician, as a priest, and as a Canush Gouin, as a collector, gatherer. He used to gather in there. And they tell one famous story about him when he was a curate in Ballyferriter. I would know this only tis in that Ba Ashneish service by, great service by Omarachu and Branach. Look it up. And they said, anyway, when he was there as a curate with Father Griffin, who was in the Kilmoyle, where he lived for 11 years, actually. I knew the Griffins there, but his parish was Father Griffin, the housekeeper, and he was told by Father Jones he lost a sixpenny bit. That's the size of my thumbnail. He lost it in the garden in the parish. He told the housekeeper, go out and search till you find it. So she went out and found it and gave it back. Did she get a tip? I don't know. But he didn't miss a trick when it came to that. And then when he was a student, he as going to school, he went to the CBS Brothers School. And then he went to the Dominican, had a classical school, second level, you know. He was a bit hardy when he went to St. Brendan's, aged almost 20. So that was older than usual. But he wanted to become a priest in Kerry. It needs you go to the St. Brendan's College or St. Michael's College in Listowel to spend some time there as a threshold, a stepping stone to, in this case, Maynooth, St. Patrick's College. So he came in, imagine, to St. Brendan's in 1889. Listen to this. As world handball champion, they beat Alderman Phil Casey in Cork in a doubles. They made him world champion. National champion, he beat Delaney from Mathai. So he claimed the national title. And he was national champion. He was Munster singles and doubles champion with James Fitzgerald, who later became world champion. Tralee man, coach builder. But he said, I could never beat Father Jones. I could never beat him. They were colleagues. They were friends. The club in Tralee is called the Fitzgerald Jones Club, the handball club. The alley, and it's in the book, a picture of the double beautiful handball court near where Seamus Satira is on the site of that handball lane on the green in Tralee. That's called the Fitzgerald Jones handball, built by the Urban Council in Tralee in the later 1940s, around the time Father Jones was celebrating his golden jubilee. So the Fitzgerald Jones team was unbeatable. When Father Jones was finished in Australia, I might tell you about his travels there in a minute, on his way back, the one of the first people he met in San Francisco was James Fitzgerald, who had come to live and play as a professional handballer across America. He put up a big price of dollars and nobody would take him on because they knew they couldn't beat Fitzgerald. But Fitzgerald said he could never beat Jones. So you're talking about real champions here. He came from the Streeter champions. We'll say he was reared in Rock Street. But I mean, even Fitzgerald said, I could never beat him. But that for Fitzgerald meant his health failed him. Even though Father Jones played with him, met with him in San Francisco in 1905. But 3 years later, he died of TB in America. Very sad. That's a young man, yeah. He was in his 30s, yeah. But,
Did Father Tom Jones recognise how good he was? Like, did he recognise that, you know, people actually almost feared him to play against him or anything like that? Like, he wasn't, like, I'm not sure what the right word to use is, but he wasn't taking it in his stride. Was he quite humble?
You put your finger on it. Actually, one of the great handball men in this country, John Lawler, who was actually born in America, came back here as Irish champion, but he always dodged and refused to play Jones. He said, I wouldn't be taking fireside challenges from people all over the country. He ducked Jones. He feared playing Jones. He knew Jones would lick him. And he later became the head of handball in this country in 1924. He came back to Dublin, set up a coach business, you know, carting business in Dublin, horses in Dublin to the port and ferrying people around. He became a very important man in handball again in Ireland, John Lawler. But Lawler was, then there was a game with Jones and Lawler in Dublin, and Lawler cut off by a sore thumb. Likely story, if you like. So therefore, Jones was fearless. I heard the stories about him playing handball. There's a lot of it in the book. About 10 chapters of the book are solely about handball, really, if you like. So I was told in Dublin lately, we launched it in Croke Park. Conor MacDonald was Uachtaráin, later at Lavia the Héireann, and we had a fabulous launch there, you know. And the handball historians, I wouldn't know this really now, Kaya, but they told me it's the most important book on handball since 1984. It's the most important first book they said about handball. I wouldn't know that now. Since the GAA centenary year, which is 1984, and of course, Dr. Croke Parris called after, was a great handball star. He played handball even as a priest afterwards. And when he built, he was in part to build the St. Conan's College in Fermoy, it's still to the good, like St. Brendan's in Killarney. He put in two handball courts there way back in the 1870s, you know. Mm-hmm. So Jones had a lot to do with that. And then to honour his golden jubilee as a priest, it was very unusual that Dublin, the authorities, as a man of Murphy was the Uachtaráin of Leroy Liva, they invited Father Jones to come to Dublin in 1945. Now his jubilee be the following year, 46. They gave him a big award. They gave him a shield with a medal on it. There's a picture of it in my book. And they honoured him. Who was there with him? Only J.J. O'Kelly. Now, J.J. O'Kelly is a man you should do a programme on sometime from Valentia Island. He has won many Las Anam or nicknames. Anam Cletta, they call it in Irish. His Anam Cletta was Skellig. He was a great friend of Jones. He published Tom Jones' translation from German to English and Irish in 1914 for the whole year of the Catholic Bulletin. Now, people, the Catholic Bulletin is a joke. Believe you me, it's the one document, the one weekly that the British authorities failed to proscribe. It was published right through the rising, right through the War of Independence. And I have that copy. My friend Dr. Tim Horgan is my copy at the moment of all those editions. I have the 1914 one in the book. And thanks to Dr. Shane Lehan, he found it for me. Shane is a Kerry historian, one of our newest deacons now, a great historian, Dr. Shane of Tralee. And he gave me a copy, imagine, one with the cover of the 1914 Christmas edition, and it's in the book. And it was the serialised Jones's translation of, it was called On Scoob, The Brush. And he translated the book into German called Glaun Beha, Glen of the Birch. It's the story of the birch. It's an odyssey. The humble birch was held in disregard, low esteem, and the Birch said, I'm worth more than this. This is an amazing story. It's a German classic called Jacobson that Jones found and translated and published in 1938. Beautiful edition. There are 12 drawings in it by a lady from Dublin called Olive Cunningham, a very good artist, definitely a very important artist, I'd say, in the 30s in Dublin. And this book, in any case, I got a copy for myself, and I found a copy to put into our library here in the Diocesan Library. But it's according to this, the scope, the Birch thinks, I'm worth more than this, and seeking liberation. There's a whole journey seeking liberation, being ignored, being disregarded, being used, being abused. And the scope that Birch is saying, if I reach fire, I will have my final freedom and liberation. It's a story, it's an odyssey. And then Jones published another book. It was after his death. He was denied it wasn't published before he died, but it was published actually in 1958. It's called On Colleen and Cybert. I showed you a picture of the cover of that book. Yes, and that's an amazing story. It's a Russian story. It's very much to do now with Kiev. Kiev was the capital of Russia in those days, not Moscow. It's interesting now the political situation at the moment. A very high-ranking officer in Kiev and his family were actually banished from Kiev to Siberia by the Tsar, by order of the authorities in Russia of the time. And the young girl there, the daughter of the house, thought this was unfair. Dad is innocent. We are suffering. She says, I am going to go to St. Petersburg. And I've been to St. Petersburg. My pal, Father Luke Roach, a marvelous city to visit. She said, I intend to go and meet the Tsar to say my dad is innocent. We are being wronged. I insist that my dad gets justice. And there's a picture of her in that book of heading off in a two-horse sled in the snow. I don't know who the artist is. I failed to find out the artist. It's the only print in the book. There's a copy in the Cork Library. I've been to see it. There's one in Navan Library and there's one in the National Museum, or the National Library, I should say, Kildare Street. But in any case, she makes that journey. She meets the Tsar and she begs and finds mercy and justice for her mom and dad, and they're restored to Kiev and to their rightful, you know, place in society. It's a great story. I think it was written for young people. It's a classic to do with an odyssey seeking justice, seeking freedom. And I think myself, now I saw a review of that book by someone who poo-pooed the book. He said the only thing about it is the cover. But the story is important, especially for young people, that a young teenager said, this is wrong. I'm going to fight for justice for my mum and dad. And she did. Yeah. And the story is she found difference. It. Oh, yeah. And he wrote that. And that was published 8 years after he died. It's a rare book now, so if anyone has a copy of it, I'd love to get one into my own hands.
Get in touch.
Well, I put it in the library here in our diocesan library if I can find a copy. But I've been blessed to be allowed to study it in Cork and the city library there. They were very kind. The librarians are marvellous. And Manute Library here in Tralee Library, exceptional. Tommy O'Connor's staff, you couldn't beat them. Eamon Brown's staff and Kathleen Rice, she found a great story for me in the book. And she's a sitter, Jack O'Shea, married to John Rice and Fossa. She got me a marvellous story out of the Evening Echo 19 years ago.
It's amazing all of these archives are so important to keep.
They are, and the people who mind them and who guide you or indicate them. You know, another man, Dr. Seamus O'Myla, Lisa Fuca, a mighty man as well. He found for me a story by Eamon O'Callaghan. Now, poor Dr. Eamon died recently. Eddie Keller from Kilgobnet brought a marvellous book, Shanachas na Corcadua. The storytellers, he said 19, I found 20 in his book, actually, storytellers of the Reeks, Miguel Cully Reeks, he's from there. And he died just before Christmas, Benach Dalish. But he found a lovely story there about Cáit ní Foghlú, Kate Foley. This is Glen Carr's story. And the great collector, Tygo Morchú from Waterville, he was a professional collector for the Cumann Bealaidis an Héireann, the Irish Folklore Commission. He had a machine called the U-John and on a bicycle. Imagine he used to come from Waterville or cross that through the Balcachine. He went in there. There's no road into it even today. There in Athena, and Cáit was living in there. When she went shopping to Killarney, she went on horseback. No bicycle, no, she went on horseback.
That was a long journey.
Oh yeah, that was a great journey from Glencairn into Killarney, yeah. But anyway, she was a great singer, and she thought the voice, she said, on the machine, Tig's machine, was sweeter than her own voice. She didn't realize it was her voice, you understand me? She'd never heard her voice before. But anyway, when Father Jones had stations in the house, he would play the fiddle and she would dance on the floor for the stations in Glencairn.
And that's something I read in your press release as well, was he was a fantastic musician.
who was an amazing man from the point of view, they said he could knock a tune out of any instrument. Now, I was told by Father Thomas Hickey, who knew him and remembered him, and a lot of Father Tom's memoirs are in the book, thanks to Bosco Cruhoir from Ballinarteric. He's from, West Kerry. Bosco gave us Father Thomas's personal account and his memories. But he said he could play 14. I found 13, I think, and I have him in the book. He was an amazing musician. But on his way back from Australia, he spent 5 years in Australia. He spent 5 months. His health broke down when he was in Australia. He was living out in the bush and living in very austere and poor conditions, you know. Mm-hmm. So the bishop said, time to go home. So he came into San Francisco. Then he travelled America with a priest, Father J.P. Devan, a Tralee man, Castle Street man, his own neighbour. And he'd been in Killarney, St. Brendan's with him. And they visited a lot of people. I mentioned San Francisco. They went to Chicago, where there was a session for him, you know, a typical Irish gathering with Captain Francis O'Neill, head of the police in Chicago, who 3 years earlier, 2 years earlier, published, I have a copy of his book, 2000 Irish Tunes. Yeah, Captain what? Francis O'Neill. Now, if you could play any kind of an instrument, you were straight into the police force in Chicago.
Really?
His brother-in-law was Barney Delaney from Tullamore. Barney was a great Ilan pipe player. Now, they call it the Union Pipes. In the book, it's called the Bagpipes. But in fact, for the first time in his life, Tom Jones, who could play a lot of music instruments at this stage, saw the Ilan Pipes in action at the hands of Barney Delaney. Now, Barney was one of these brilliant musicians, a brother-in-law of Francis O'Neill, by the way. He was also a police force member in Chicago. So he's, I'm going to learn those. He even played tunes on them that same night at that party in Chicago on his way through.
And you just got it?
Well, he said, when I go home, I'll get a set. And then I have an account there of a concert he gave 12 months later. He played the bagpipes with the Union Pipes. And he became a great friend of John Potts and Leo Rossum in Dublin. They were two Wexford men living in Dublin. They're renowned pipers. And at my launch in Croke Park, who came to play, Leo's grandson, Kevin Rossum, came and played the pipes. Stephen Scales played the pipes for us in the launch in Glen Bay. And who played the pipes was Tralee, David Hegarty and Ciarán Dalton played the pipes and music in the launch in Tralee in the county museum.
Isn't that a fabulous kind of circle?
Yeah, these are great pipers. Now, do you play music on your show?
I do.
I'll give you a loan of my tape, the latest one, Littoral, from my fellow. I got him on the piping, Leonard Barry from Kilmiley. Leonard's now based in Sligo. This is his third CD. And you might play one of his pieces.
I would love to, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lee, now, so we wish him well now. His mum and dad, they sent me a copy of that for Christmas, so Cogarda Cosloat, you know. We used to do things when I was in Kilmiley, called Glorin Isle. And Joanne, his sister, head of dance afterwards in Shimsa. Joanne, I celebrate her wedding now, and God bless them for the new year. And in any case, and Leonard one night was doing, he was great on the low whistle, trained with Father Pat Ahern in Finuig, you know, Chuck Shims and Finuig, still going strong.
Yes.
But I said to David, maybe Leonard might like to take up the pipes. And Leonard, big smile. He was only in national school, I think, maybe 12 years of age. And a big smile anyway. And Dave said, I'll make a set for you now. You'll be taking part in competition next spring. So he made a set for Leonard that year. Leonard won his first prize before Christmas that year. And then I was at granddad's funeral, that Phil O'Brien's dad died. He was the parish clerk in Abbey Dorney, who played going out the, as the coffin was going out the door, Leonard Young on the pipes. And I asked him, what's the name of the piece? And they said, Tom McGraw in the Chulla. My love is gone to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a beautiful piece that Leonard played for his granddad.
Yeah.
And now he's now a famous piper, and he's on there with Gion 3, and he's all over the country. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's a new piece called Littoral, which means, you know, the land alongside the beach or along the shoreline, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the marginal land and water, you know. Littoral is a lovely piece. You might find a piece to play.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Tom Jones used to spend all his summers in Dublin with John Potts. And John's grandson, I was living here, Terry. So I was in touch with the family through that. And also Leo Rossum, which his grandson played, Kevin played for us in Dublin recently.
Fabulous.
And there's a lovely story, maybe if you like, a funny story about that. He had a rickety motor car, a Ford 10, a baby Ford. He was a very poor driver. There's stories galore about his driving or inability to drive, and people pushing the car, you know. But in any case, on one occasion, he was coming back by night, obviously, that rocky road, I'd say, near the Red Foxes there somewhere, and the car went in over the ditch into a dike, into a drain, sideways. He was stuck, and nobody moving that time. So he said he'd wait till morning to get help to put the car back on the road and get him onto the presbytery. But to while away the time, he took out the pipes. Can you imagine now in the dike below the road in the bog, he's playing the pipes. And there's a poor colour, I'm sure, a servant girl going for the cows early in the morning, as she usually did. And the next thing, she heard the pipes from the bog and she screamed and ran home as quick.
It was probably very eerie.
She was terrified. That's one of the stories.
But that does sound quite scary.
Another story that was told lately now again, because the presbytery in the old days was kind of west of the village of Glen Bay, and the school was out there as well. The former presbytery was near that school, and the children going to school would often be asked to push Father Jones' car, get it going, and they'd come in late. And of course, it was well known that a lot of people pushed his car. Bishop Billy Crean would tell you that. He was a curate in Glen Bay. He told me that story as well. But this was anyway, the boys pushing the car and coming to the teacher. We're sorry, Master, we're late. We had to push the parish priest, Father Jones' car, which was fair enough. They came in out this day. The boys took a chance, came in late for school, and said we were pushing the cheek of the stations are over in Glencar this morning, the other side of the path.
They were trying to take advantage.
That's right. They were caught rotten. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And Father Tom, the book, as you said, it was launched just before Christmas, and hopefully a lot of people had purchased it at the time. What was the kind of feedback that you were getting from people?
Yeah, well, I said the handball people think is the first and most important handball book since 1984. I wouldn't have known that now, but they tell me that. They're very excited about it. And getting, even the other day, I got a letter from Dick Ling's wife, Margaret, and I've sent her a copy in the post. He's a famous handballer and hurler from Wexford. So a lot of people in athletics are very interested. Frank's Kemble is a big GA man. Enda Timoney. And through Enda Timoney, actually, his son has gone up with a young girl called Tara. And they were telling me, a priest, me, was writing a book about a priest from Kerry, a handball priest called Father Jones. And Tara said, that's my mum's granduncle. He said, yeah, that's my mum's granduncle. So Bernadette and Tara were at the launch, and they gave me that an amazing front page.
I was going to say, the picture is absolutely striking. It's really, really nice.
It's a picture of Father Jones. There's one at the rear cover. That's the only we had of him, kind of very severe. Now, he was a very austere kind of man. He was very hard on himself. He was very hard. As a young fella, he was very dedicated.
He took no break.
No, he was absolutely 100% plus concentrating on what he was doing. Handball. Like, for instance, the famous game with Delaney. He was beaten in the first round up in Athy. And they say he had in the hope and hell, beaten the Ireland champion, who the game was 9-2, 11 games each, I think. So in the hope, his father. And then all of a sudden, he didn't turn up for the game. It was on, I think, at 3 o'clock. And then at just a second to 3, he appeared. He'd been praying in front of a statue in Tig Diggins' room inside. Didn't know where he was. They thought he feared to play, but he was fearless. Mm-hmm. He played him and he beat him. Beat the Ireland champ. In fact, that poor man.
And that's what you called the book.
Unbeatable. But they couldn't beat him. I heard since from people who know about handball, he could climb a wall. How would you climb a wall to play the ball? At that time, you could play, it was a four wall court, with your hands and both feet. He could, with his both feet, hands behind his back, he was just unbeatable. The handball court in Maynooth to this day is called after him. He left Maynooth in 1896, and we played handball in the Kerry Alley. Or Jones's Court, call after him. Now, there's no other student that I know, unless they became Archbishop or Cardinal or something, have anything called after them. But there's a seminarium, a young man from Rock Street, and there's a handball court called Jones's Court. There's a court called after him in Glen Bay, court called after him in Tralee as well, the club there. So the famous, and he was a famous man, the former president of Maynooth, Daniel Mannix, who finished up as Archbishop of Melbourne. I've been to Melbourne to visit his cathedral there. He said about him, he was the best athlete that ever passed through the walls of this college. He was unbeatable, he said. And no, that's Daniel, who's a Corkman from North Cork as well.
And it takes a lot for a Corkman to say that.
Well, it was. No. In Maynooth, and he was very dedicated. He was the perfect student. I was kind of thinking about this. But things were very rigid and severe. He got through every year without a problem. There are seven steps to the altar. He every step by step by step. He never faltered. He was never docked one because why? He was the perfect student. He was self-disciplined. He was kind of austere, severe in himself. And then he could be hard then afterwards, maybe on people, because I told you he had a great grow for gathering in money. And that was true. He's a name about that. And there are lots of funny stories about it. And others were maybe something mightn't be too pleased. But his Golden Jubilee of 1946, this is hard to believe. He gave away £19,000 to the missions to prepare students to work on the missions. Now he gave £10,000 to the Columban Fathers, who produced the magazine The Far East. Now, that was €425,000 in 1946. He gave £5,000 to the SMR Fathers. He'd first time for the Dalgan priests, the Minute Mission of China, as it's called today. Our teachers are back from China. The Columbans had been there for years, evangelizing people there who opened the Christian faith. And then £4,000 to the Kiltegan Fathers. I wrote recently, sent a copy of the book. They do a review in their magazine every month. They might do it for sports or for the book. To Tomás O'Connor, who's uncle of Joe O'Connor, our latest midfielder there and all-star. And Tomás was amazed with this. He gave, he said, €170,000, £4,000 in 1946. He gave it all away for the missions. And about Kiltegan mission, the African, you know, African mission, and the Maynooth mission to China, the Columbans, were found out of Maynooth College. Now, he was actually gone from Maynooth in 1896, and the Columbans were found in 1916, that time, and Kiltegan was later than that. But they were founded by priests who'd been studying in Maynooth after Jones, the next generation after Jones, in fact. Yeah. You know, yeah.
And Father Tom, if people want to buy your book about Father Tom Jones, where can they get it?
Well, it's available in the two presbyteries in Tralee, thanks to Father Tighe now and Father Patrick. I think O'Mahony's shop might have it as well there, and that's it, the publisher put it in there. In Killarney's in the Cathedral Bookshop, the Friday Bookshop, O'Connor's here on Beach Road, Mucker's House have it as well, and I can provide it someone to write to me at Park Road. Now, this only it's costing €15, and it's about €3, with the postage is £2.95. So we'll charge three, the cost of the the envelope, I suppose. So, to Margaret now and Dick Ling, I posted to them and they got it within 24 hours, which was lovely.
Yeah,
and they
really
got it for, she got it for nulling them on. So she was delighted. You know?
And you know, it's the type of book, you know, you're looking for something to read, something different, someone local. You know, we have so many local heroes here in Kerry. So it's amazing that you took the time to write this and we can be all educated on who Father Tom Jones was.
I think so, because like he worked in the Atlantic Rim of our parish, Dingle Bay. He started in Glen Bay as a curate, went back there in his parish priest. He was there 24 years in all. That's a quarter of his life, you know. Yeah. He worked in Ballyferriter. And I have two stories about Ballyferriter you might like to hear. He worked in Dingle and then he worked in Killorglan and Carsavine. So the whole Atlantic Rim, yeah. So I never worked in South Kerry. I worked all over the place myself, but all the Atlantic Rim, if you like, with those parishes, Barnashrida. But his first Saturday visited the Blasket Islands, and it was 1909, August, and there was a terrible chapter called A Black, Black Day on the Blaskets. That's a quotation. He went on to meet the people, and there's no church. There wasn't any church or cemetery on the Blaskets. Mm-hmm. They'd come to Dunquin, you know, and Slayhead. But anyway, he went on to, and that was the day of a terrible tragedy, the double drowning of Donal Crohan, the son of the Tomás Crohan, the famous writer, the Island Man. Now his daughter, Donal's sister, that is, was in trouble in the water with a beautiful girl from Dublin, Eileen McNichol. Eileen McNichol was the legendary Gaelic League advocate and women's liberation movement women way back in 1909. She really was. A friend of Father McPearish, they say maybe girlfriend. I'm not sure of that, but it looks like they were very close associates in the Gaelic League in Dublin. She came to West Kerry. She was into the Gaelic in a big way. Her brother, actually, Jasper, was a doctor in Bolivia, Cochabamba. He'd been there. He found the Gaelic League there. She found the Gaelic League branch in Paris. This is an international woman, really. Her father worked for Dublin Castle, for the British authorities, but these were Gael Goiri. Her brother here in Ireland, Saoirse, who worked with the Kerry Dice afterwards in the production of books in Irish for young teenagers. An amazing story for another day, maybe. But they were Gail Gordy. She came and they couldn't get accommodation in she had for a short while in Ventry. Then she moved to Dunqueen. There was no place. And then a man there said, the famous man said, try the island. And she went down to the island. She taught the girls there how to swim. And one day, Friday, the 13th of August, 1909, Cart got into trouble, was rescued. Donal and she drowned. And Father Tom was on the spot. And he was out in the boats bringing in the bodies. He worked on the boat bodies, tried to revive them. But there was no kiss of life that time, no CPR like we have today, you know. It was a terrible tragedy. But he was there for that. And until Arnach himself said it was the biggest funeral ever seen in on the Blaskets, you know. Yeah. So they brought the remains then into, there's a man called Cousins and his wife. They were great, they were not Roman Catholic people, but they were great friends of Eileen. And they were great advocates of, you know, the whole movement at the time of the franchise for the women, the vote for the women, which wasn't allowed at the time. And she too was a great advocate of that, you know. They were great into the liberation of people and the recognition of British times now, the British Empire and Commonwealth and so on. But anyway, the body then went from Dunqueen, and Father Jones was asked to go ahead and send the telegram to Dublin to note of her parents, you know, Eileen's parents. And there was the mass in the Monday morning, Sunday night, the removal. Monday morning they had mass, and then the remains went by train, that time from Dingle to Dublin. And was the biggest funeral ever into Glasnevin. Paddy MacPhailish was reportedly in Ventry and was definitely in Glasnevin. For this girl was a sweetheart, certainly most close ally and a Gaelic ad. That was 1909. It was his first month in the parish of Ballyferriter. So that was, you know, and maybe it was there he came into the Irish in a big way. 1916 then, there was a terrible Easter week, 1916. It was a terrible tragedy off the Irish coast. Sarah MacDonald last weekend put it into the Irish Independent that it happened off the Fastnet Rock. I'm not sure of the location, but the German U-boat 19 torpedoed a merchant ship from Norway carrying wheat from Buenos Aires, wheat, and it was a merchant ship, and they torpedoed it. And one group arrived safely into Slayhead, but another group were at sea. Their boat sank. A boat went out to bring them in. So imagine 8 men in a dying condition, were seen on the bump of a steep cliff at Ballinabuck. Now that's what the Begley's famous dance hall was. That's what the Begley's farm is today. And Moira was telling me this, I met her recently and wish her well now for the new year and all the man and everything. But Moira's grandfather, Patrick Lynch, father of 2 children. Another man, Patrick O'Connor, father of 11 children. Another man, Patrick O'Connor, single boy. They sent word for Father Jones, horse, to the presbytery in Ballyferriter. He came on horseback, saw the 8 men 200 feet down the steep cliff. Moira called Hoas an Chantuert, the inlet or the creek of danger, Danger Creek. And Father Jones went straight down.
Without any talk, just straight down.
The book, I have a full account of this in the book. The other men went down around about a very circuitous but dangerous way as well. And they managed to throw a rope onto the boat. They pulled those men one by one, brought them off on their backs, one by one. And the women above were in an awful way. The families above were terrorized. But they brought in the 8 safe. The date is the 26th of April, 1916, Easter week. These men had been 50 hours in open sea in an open boat. They were in a dying condition, all saved and rescued by Father Tom and those 3 brave West Kerry men. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story.
And he's an amazing man.
He was an amazing man, but they were amazing people too. We shouldn't forget. And they each got, from the British authorities, they got a cert and a few pounds, yeah. Mm-hmm. And from the Norway king, they got a cert and a few pounds as well. I think Jones didn't get the few pounds, which he wouldn't be too happy about. But he got this amazing silver goblet. And in the book, I have pictures of the goblet. Now, thanks to the Jones family, that silver goblet is now on view in the Kerry County Museum, together with a handball signed by Father Jones and other famous handballers. And there are pictures of there's a picture in it with the open boat, men in the stormy sea. Lovely picture of the Norway flag. Now it's in black and white here, it's in colour to be seen. And the King of Norway gave him that guy. He was now in Kilorglan. As he was moved that summer 1916 by the Bishop to by Charles O'Sullivan to work in Glenbey, or in Killarlin. And that was the time of the Troubles then, you know, the 1916, the Rising, the War of Independence, and the RIC fled the barracks. So who's going to patrol Puck Fair during the gathering day, the fair day, and the scattering day? Who patrolled Croke Park? Father Tom Jones and Father Michael O'Donoghue, his fellow curate, and the local IRA battalion. So any fella was out of order, or Myrick, or Magalore, you'd locked in overnight in the temperance hall to put manners on him.
Father Tom, we could stay here all day talking about him, but you know, he's just so fascinating, so many stories from him. But again, I would really urge people to have a look at the book and read it and find out all those stories. And I'm sure as well, if they meet you, I'm sure that they'll hear loads of stories from you about him.
Well, more and more sources are coming in, actually, you know. But yeah, it's a book about a priest. Of course, his time in Australia, his first day in Australia, and this is the evidence. I heard it often, but I got it from Father Hickey verbatim. He arrived at Rockmount, the bishop's house, on a Sunday. And what's all the commotion? And oh, that's the annual sports, sir. Oh, the sports. I'm competing. He got in free. No, he wasn't competing, but he got in free anyway. He cleaned up. He came with all the trophies.
Wow.
And like in sports events like that, and I have a good account of those here in the book, he was banned from taking part because he was winning everything.
Because he was too good.
Winning, running, jumping, weight throwing, and he was a brilliant swimmer as well. The guy was unbeaten. He could play cricket, rugby, soccer, but he said golf is too slow.
Father Tom, thank you so much for your time and congratulations on publishing the book. You must be delighted.
Well, I'm delighted now that it's out there. I thank Joe O'Donoghue of London Books and Michael Brennan of Red Stripe Press. You know, they were the publishers who kind of helped guide it through. And you'll find in the book, and it's a most beautiful tribute to anybody, and especially involved in sport or a priest like myself. And up on the wall there, since 1946, and it's in the new courthouse, or the new clubhouse put up there by Father Michal Galvin, who is his former curate, and Kevin Griffin and the committee there in 1979. It says, Thomas Mac Owen, Jubilee Orga, which means his Golden Jubilee, on Leach Bahraina, the Chid Lirod Laiva in Erin Nuherlar. That's meant the greatest warrior or hero of handball folk in Ireland or overseas. So you couldn't beat it.
No, you really couldn't.
Yeah, but not there, Coramila.